Place to be nation, universe, what is up? It's time for the Survivor Series 2016 reaction show. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, subbing for good old Will from Texas, who is busy doing things in Texas. I'm actually telling the truth. He's in San Antonio right now, handling business, as only good old Will can. But I am joined this evening by two of our more esteemed guests. Yeah, exactly. Really? And you heard from that voice, the man who's on every reaction show with all of his great wit, impressions, and etc. Johnny Sorrow. Johnny, what's up?
Well, after an intro like that, I just can only say thank you, sir. And you know what? I like being treated. You know what? You know how to treat a guest unlike that fucking Will. Thank
you. Yeah, I'm not going to browbeat you tonight, so... Anyway, it's not going to be like last show, so we may get off a little easier tonight. Because
that was like Buckley Gore Vidal.
I mean, he was basically interrogating you last show, so
he's going to waterboard. Well, now apparently he's allowed to waterboard me, so we'll see.
Yeah, and we are also joined by the other Hales brother, who has made a name for himself in the podcast world lately on these shows. The man who watches more WWE television and matches in general than anybody on the internet, including more people probably in that company, Devin Hales. Devin, what's up, brother?
I'm doing good. I've slowed down a little bit on the house show watching, mostly because when you watch, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, and Sami Zayn in a triple threat match for the Universal title, in a weekend loop, they're all the same match. So I just watch the matches from one channel, which typically has one match from the loop. So I've slowed down a little bit on the house show matching or the house show watching, but my list will continue to come out.
And football season. And football season in effect, too, so that also helps him.
That's true.
So, yeah.
And he's being put to work in the sweatshop and making Papa Hales t-shirts.
Hey, let me tell you what, Papa Hales is submitted himself as a hardcore legend tonight.
Well, let me tell you.
Yes, please tell that story.
Just real quick. Okay, so apparently he ran around the ringside area, PWX today, and was pumping up the crowd for the main event, I think. And he tripped over the steps coming back to his seat. And busted up his knee and bruised his head, and he took pictures.
You see that on Twitter.
And he actually cut up his knee pretty bad, which isn't a good thing.
Of course.
But then he, of course, my mother saw it on Twitter, and she proceeded to get onto him a little bit about that. Then he had to call her and explain to her what happened, which is quite amusing to witness. But he's fine, and he was telling my mother on the phone that it's a tough business.
I saw the pictures a while ago before we started the show of him having a nice dinner after the show with Fred Yehi and D.A. Brewer and our buddy Patrick Alvarez. So, yeah, I mean, Papa Hales, he's old, he's tough. He's tougher than shoe leather, like Terry Funk once said his hero. So, God bless Papa Hales. And, yeah, if you want to see those pictures, go on Twitter to @MikeHales9, and you will see all the greatness of Papa Hales this weekend. Because if you haven't seen the PWX shows on Flow Slam from Saturday and Sunday, check him out. It was a really, really strong tournament. Anthony Henry won the X16. And Papa Hales is front and center both nights and just being awesome. Loving Papa Hales to death. So, anyway, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. All right, let's get on with Survivor Series 2016 in Toronto at the Air Canada Center. And it's a two-hour pre-show. Now, I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now. I was recording part of Between the Sheets, which will drop also today, on for the first hour of the pre-show. So I really didn't see the 6-7 hour. But I was following along on Twitter, and seeing what Devin was putting down, and Devin, you were pretty much about ready to have blood shooting out of your eyeballs for this pre-show, weren't you?
Oh yeah, it was. This pre-show panel is about as thrilling as it gets. when you have Lita who doesn't get her cues properly, I guess, and messes up, plugging main event for TLC. They made her do it twice because she messed it up the first time. And you have of course Booker saying random things, and he and Lawler, you know, digging at each other politically the entire time, which is getting really annoying. So it was a brutal first hour of the pre-show until we finally got some in-ring action.
Well, I gotta say, I didn't watch it, but the idea of the African-American king arguing with the white king about politics, that sounds somewhat interesting.
and Jerry Lawler called Randy Orton Randy Owens, so I had to make the joke. I had to make the joke about Alabama, because Randy Owens was the lead singer of Alabama. So Lawler was thinking about some Dixieland Delight during the pre-show.
or a hooker named Elvira.
That's Oak Ridge Boys, Johnny. Don't you get confused.
Oh, who gives a shit?
No Elvira. But if you've watched as much 1985 World Championship Wrestling shows as I've watched the past few months, with the commercials, which makes it a better experience, by the way. That Oak Ridge Boys commercial, flipping that their greatest hits album, was on every show for almost the entire year. And yes, Elvira was prominently featured on that show. But anyway, back to the Survivor Series pre-show. We did have two matches in the 6 o'clock hour, I guess. 6-7 hour. We started out with Drew Gulak, Tony Nese, and Arya Davari versus TJ Perkins, Rich Swann, and Noam Dar. I guess this would be your preview of 205 Live and what you can probably end up seeing on that one-hour show starting a couple weeks after a SmackDown. And Johnny, did you watch the match? And if you did, what'd you think of the action here?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't because I had even forgotten. I knew it was going to be a longer show. But the two-hour fucking preview, I was doing other shit. I think at the beginning, I was probably at the supermarket deciding what sausages I was going to buy to grill for the show tonight.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
Well, we went with hot dogs and hamburgers.
It's a standard shrimp. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, yeah. Afterwards, right before the main event, my roommate Jeanette made cream cheese pumpkin spice snickerdoodles.
Without the extra herbs?
Oh, no.
Okay, all right.
That's, I know what you're getting at. No, there's a
challenge. I know you like the edibles, Johnny. I mean, we know that.
Oh, I do. And I'm currently imbibing. But I heard that it was a lot of fun, and I'm probably going to go back and check it out. But I'm just like, Devin, how can you watch a two-hour pre-show?
I couldn't. When the matches aren't on, I'm doing other things. Like I was eating dinner and stuff like that. So, for this match, it was actually the highlight of the pre-show. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they start going. You know, they start. You know, guys pair off, couple of exchanges. Then all of a sudden, the audio goes out on Mora. And Renee Young comes in through production, and she goes, "Hey, can you hear me? Can you hear me? All right, great. 9 minutes." She gave production screwed up, and Renee Young was asking how much time the match had. And they said 9 minutes. So my brother Dustin looked at the time, and he said, "Oh, man, 9 minutes is 6:25. This match is going to end at 6:25. They just said that by accident. And then ended at 6:25.
Amazing. Gotta love. Kevin Dunn, everybody.
I got to tell you, as far as a blooper goes, that's great. But there's also that part of me that makes the, you know, you got 9 minutes, and they actually are able to fucking go, boom, right down to the fucking minute.
That's impressive.
The referee keeps it. That's why the referee's got that earpiece in his ear. You know, got to keep him, you know, going. Say, hey, all right. So, all right, we got this much left. We got this much left, you know. They let him know.
Right, but even performance-wise, just, you know, okay, here's how we're going to make it all fit in right to the goddamn minute. Yeah,
now to the match, Devin, one thing I noticed, and I was talking to Bix during this because we were finishing up as this match was going on, TJ Perkins, he looks like he's lost some weight, hasn't he? I mean, his shorts were like baggy, and I don't know.
He hasn't wrestled in a few weeks since that bad apron bump that he took on that Kendrick match a few weeks ago.
Well, apparently, come on, the only thing that saved him from being homeless is winning that belt, so apparently he's homeless again, and, you know, food's hard to come by.
You might be right there, Johnny. You might be right. But Richard Swan got the pin, and he's been put over a lot lately. So, I mean, we got to think that him and Kendrick are going to have a title match very soon.
Yeah. I mean, the match was fun, by the way. But, you know, it was kind of funny because, you know, Renee piped in production. But and it distracted people. But it was a fun match. I'm a little tired of seeing kind of the same combination of these six-man teams. But the matches are fine. And I know they're bringing in Tozawa and Dorada and stuff like that.
Here. And Jack Gallagher.
Yes, Jack. Yes. Jackie boy. So that will spice things up a little bit. But the match was fine, and the finish was pretty gruesome. I'm pretty sure this was a finish, if memory serves. Swan did his standing 450, but he did a 450 knee instead.
Yes, it was nasty.
So, yeah.
The DeVar, I'm sure, didn't feel too good after that, no doubt. But Swanee went over, and we'll see what happens from there. All right. Next match on the pre-show, Kane versus Luke Harper. This match had some interesting feedback on Twitter. Some people loved it. Some people hated it. Devin, where'd you fall into this match?
I liked it. I thought it was fine. Luke Harper had a good match with Apollo Crews, who I'm not a fan of, on Main Event a week or two ago. Harper is kind of a miracle worker. Right? He's really good. Plain and simple. I mean, you know, Kane was fine as far as, you know, Kane is concerned. I really don't hate Kane as much as others do. I wish he didn't go over all the time, but, you know, that's not that big of a deal to me. But I thought the match was fine. They worked a perfectly fine 8-minute match to me.
Now, Johnny, we didn't know at the time how it was going to happen in the the last Survivor Series match where Luke Harper would play a role in that. And it's kind of like, well, why did you job him to Kane? What are your thoughts about Kane going over?
Well, you read my mind because that's what my point was. I thought that was an attempt, whether or not successful or not, or you agree with it, an attempt at making the surprise of Harper showing up a bit more surprising because he had lost earlier. That's what I think their thinking is, if you get my drift. I don't know that even I agree with it or not, but that's what I think their thinking is. I thought the match, I was actually watching this while doing stuff inside, and I thought they were really trying hard. I wasn't all that enamored with it, except for Harper, because Harper's awesome. You know, and I don't hate Kane either, but, you know, it's, you know, getting towards the end here. I mean, I think he still works pretty well for a guy his size and his age, but, you know, it's still, I'm just not enthralled by a Kane match. And I just want to mention Luke Harper's new Titantron entrance is killer. Instead of all the crazy eyes, now that they light up the ramp with graphics as well, and it all just looks like a rundown backwood shack and wood coming down there, I was like, that's slick. I mean, that's really slick, and it was probably my favorite part of it, because I was like, oh, he got a great new entrance, that means he's gonna win, right? Okay.
Yeah, he should win.
But when I gotta tell you, when he showed up at the end, and we're not spoiling anything, people saw the show. I think it maybe worked a little bit on my end because I didn't see it coming. I was like, they jobbed him out on the pre-show. He's not gonna be around, and he is.
Yeah.
So I think that's the reason. I think that's the reason. And I thought the match was decent. I mean, you know, Lawler and Booker afterwards were going like, "Did you see how much those guys turned it up? They were trying to follow that cruiserweight match." And I was like, I didn't see the cruiserweight match, but if you say so, you are the expert.
Yeah, I just think Kane, I mean, Kane going over Luke Harper in 2016, it's just not where it needs to be happening. So,
I think the reasoning was what I said. Because I agree with you, but I think that's the reasoning.
You could be right. All right, main show time. We start off with the women. Bayley, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Alicia Fox, and Nia Jax representing Team Raw against Becky Lynch, Naomi, Natalya, Alexa Bliss, and Carmella. And Natalya, you say? Well, here's what happened. Nikki Bella was attacked by a mystery person, hit her in the head, and she couldn't compete. So Natalya convinced Daniel Bryan to get her in the match, and she got in the match, and... wow, this was the start of the theme of the night with some very interesting booking regarding eliminations goes. Real quick, Alicia Fox over Carmella, Alexa over Alicia Fox, Naomi by countout, Natalya over Sasha Banks, Charlotte over Natalya, Becky Lynch over Nia Jax by submission. Charlotte over Alexa Bliss, and then Bayley pinning Becky Lynch to win it. Bayley and Charlotte, your sole survivors. And Johnny, I thought this was a really fun match. It had some sloppy spots at times, but yeah. But I think overall as a whole that it was pretty fun. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was wondering if with the submission on Nia, if because they were supposed to hit a double DDT on Nia, and it just went wrong. Like, Nia wasn't in position or didn't go for it right, and it just looked like they all just fell down. And then suddenly it went to the, within like 30 seconds to the armbar dealy. And did they call that on the fly? It's like maybe the double DDT.
Well, here's a quick question. Do you think that some of these communication problems is because these folks haven't been working against each other in the past few months?
Possibly, but maybe especially with a lot of the women who I know that's the thing everyone says, well, they rehearse together more than the other the guys do and shit. It's been a criticism. And so maybe there's something to that, but I thought this is all really disjointed match. I thought there was some good stuff in it, but yeah, there was a definite confusion going on during it. And I do like the finish, you know, where, you know, okay, Bayley wins and Charlotte's immediately like, okay, fuck you.
Oh yeah.
You're the next challenger. I'm gonna fuck you up. She tosses away the thing, like, okay, I did this tonight, but I'm a Flair, you know. And liked that a lot.
And you know what?
And Bayley winning, I liked a lot, too.
And that's the difference between Team Raw and Team SmackDown. Team Raw waits to attack their people after the match. Not like Team SmackDown. They want to fight each other during matches.
Well, what I was... The reason it was a little... One of the reasons it was disappointing was on the build-up on the TV, when a lot of people were like, well, why do these people care so much about this brand rivalry thing? And all my reasons is, well, these are wrestlers. They'll fight over anything. You know, Kane and Chris Jericho feuded over spilled coffee. So, you know, they're willing to fight, and they're big dumb jocks who'll fight about anything. But the women's actually had a good, legitimate reason because of the whole Diva Revolution. All the ones that were names are on Raw, and the ones on SmackDown are, you know, proving themselves. And on the TV, the ones on SmackDown have been far better. The matches have been better. Everything's been better. And I was expecting a better match because the buildup was great. And it just ended up, it was really sloppy, I thought. And I didn't enjoy it.
All right, Devin. we on Twitter we were talking about some of the eliminations, and I know you're a big time SmackDown guy, and boy, SmackDown women got treated like jobbers in this match, didn't they?
Yeah, just a little bit. It was, I was personally disappointed because I'm a Nikki Bella mark. So when she was out of the match, I was like, damn it.
Okay, quick question, No, okay, and both of you, who do you think is going to be the person that attacked Nikki? All right, Devin, you go first.
I think it's, I'm going to go the easy way and say I think it was Natty because of the thing, and I think they're going to do a few with Natty.
Oh, Johnny. I guess Johnny didn't hear me. I think Natty. Dave Meltzer thinks it's Natty too. So.
I think it is Natty. I was disappointed that Nikki, you know, wasn't in the match. Kind of bummed me out. But I get it. You know, I think if it is Natty that attacked her, it makes sense from a storyline perspective. But it also makes sense because, you know, the Toronto crowd, you know, was you know, popping for Natty, you know, the Canadian pride. So I got it, you know, from that standpoint, although I was a little disappointed. You know, the match proper itself was fine. Mm. I thought it was fun, but it was weird. I don't know. I thought that there were moments that were like, that it started to pick up, but it was one of the shorter matches on the show. And I mean, it still went like 20 minutes cause you know, it's an elimination tag, but I just don't feel like it might have been because they haven't worked with each other or whatnot, but they were, I think, asked to work a pretty fast pace. And that didn't really go well with them. I think it would have worked better if they would have been able to work a little bit more of a slower pace. But I think, you know, the fast pace kind of added to the sloppiness, especially with the more inexperienced ladies like Naomi and Carmella, who are improving. But, you know, it's when you have to pick up the pace like that, it can be a little bit more tough. But I mean, I liked it. It was a fun match. I thought Nia was great in it. I liked all of her power spots, and she actually got over with the crowd, which was cool to see. Mm-hmm.
So did Alexa.
I was great. Just about to say Alexa. She was like, she really brought her nastiness in this match. She was great, and I thought you know, Becky held things together really well. I thought she was kind of the strongest baby face. In this match, I thought those were the three best workers in the match, and I liked the post match a lot too. Like Johnny, I thought it was a smart way to. I thought it was kind of brilliant, you know, that it almost seemed like I don't think this is what they were going for, but you could kind of, you know, Charlotte kind of let Bayley win because she had beaten Sasha. You know what I mean? You know, Sasha was out of the match, but she was like, Bayley's going to be my next challenger. She realizes it, so. It's almost like she wanted Bayley to be her challenger, so she's going to let Bayley win the match, and Foley and Stephanie are going to see that and say, okay, well, Bayley won the match for us. She's the number one contender. So Charlotte lets that happen. She laughs, and she goes, ha-ha, now you're the number one contender? I'm going to beat your ass now. Yeah. So,
And to your point, what it's doing is using the Survivor Series match just to propel angles on both shows, because on the SmackDown show, it can be, you know, we can't even get along. Fuck you. They just keep fighting. And right. Then you have what you were talking about. And what they did was, you know, show the beginnings of Bayley and Charlotte. So, yeah, right. I think that it's the match itself is just background to getting those stories going.
And part of me thinks that the Nikki and Natalya thing may be a total divas angle, too, maybe. I don't know. Why they're put together, you know, would be something to do with the show. I could be wrong about that. And
maybe Nikki was like, I know these Canadian crowds and they're going to boo the shit out of me. And I'm just not fucking doing it. Fuck you. Natty, would you like to go out there in front of your hometown. Look, I think we can reach a solution that'll benefit the both of us.
And the two things about this match, the two eliminations that struck me were Carmella and Sasha Banks. You know, Carmella, I mean, she's been cold as far as crowd reaction goes, but they pushed her on SmackDown. The fact that she jumped to Alicia Fox, that was like, whoa. And then Sasha, you know, getting rolled up by Natalya was kind of a odd finish too. I mean, I just got rid of Sasha quick.
I think that was purely for surprise reasons.
Yeah. Same. Just about to say that, Johnny.
Yeah,
I agree.
You're probably right. It's just interesting to see it.
Cause look at the tag teams Survivor Series match that we're going to get to later.
Oh,
surprise.
Oh, definitely.
So. They between the surprise eliminations and the we're all going to stand and look at each other in the middle of the ring. They went to a lot of the same tropes. In each.
They did.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it continued later in the show. All right, we get a backstage skit next with Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows making a million chin jokes to James Ellsworth, much to Vince McMahon's delight, because I'm sure he was lying in a puddle of his own urine from laughing so hard. And they broke.
and you know who else is laughing his way to the bank? James Ellsworth, because he just got signed for a real contract.
Props to the guy for you know, hey, Vince McMahon loves him, so that's props to him. He loves laughing at him.
Apparently they
but Vince loves laughing at him. That's like the main talking point in the Observer last week is that Vince gets off on the comedy on Ellsworth.
Well, you know what?
He's getting paid.
Yeah.
And speaking of guys getting laughed at, Foley would then show up, and they had a little interplay there until Braun confronted Ellsworth with his great like, "Do I know you?" So this was a funny segment. So yeah, I mean, Anderson and Gallows, I thought were real cute in this. We had some good lines, and it was what it was. So it was. Something. I mean, they were gonna have to do some of this stuff to try to kill time.
Oh, a bit of the Foley thing was kind of funny, where he's like, "Oh, I loved it when Undertaker tossed you off the cell." And he goes, "Threw me off the cell. Toss off means other things in other countries."
I was hoping he would have mentioned. I love when Vader ripped your ear off.
Yeah, well, Vader,
because everything he was saying was like that. Violence on Foley.
Yeah, well, that's what he's at the point. He said, "Are there any memories you have of me where I wasn't in a lot of agony?" And he's like, "When you beat The Rock and won the title," and then Foley gets into it, like, "Yes, I beat The Rock," and manages to get in the fact that The Rock was just voted World's Sexiest Man in People magazine, and so they managed to get that in there because they had to go, "We need to figure out a way to get that mentioned on the fucking paper."
And they picked this movie on the show too. So Rock was mentioned twice, but yeah, it was a cute segment. All right, next match, Intercontinental title, The Miz defending against Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn naturally the popular favorite in this match for various reasons, but being Canadian helped out. And Devin, another great Miz match. I mean, the guy is as consistent as can be. Right now, in these big matches, on whether on television or pay-per-view, and you know, this is yet another one. And against a different opponent, he hasn't worked Zayn, you know, in a while. They've had a few matches this year, but it's been a while since the brand split. And strong stuff.
Oh yeah, great. The thing about Miz is he's always been a good character. You know, he's always been a great character. He's always been a great promo. He's always been a great asshole heel. But there were times where he was pretty bad in the ring. Now he's very good in the ring. He's a complete wrestler now, and he's really really good. And the thing is he's found a formula because he works a lot of the same spots in his matches, and kind of works them around. You know, his heel spots in his matches, the Maurice distractions. Going to the floor and goading Zayn to come up to the ring ropes, and then of course clipping Sammy at the knee when Sammy was getting into it with Maurice. So he's got this formula that really works well. All of his matches have heat. He's great. He's awesome. and I really, really like this match. I can like the Blue Thunderbomb Nerfall never gets old, and I don't think Sammy's
he's never won a match on WWE television with it. No,
but it never gets old.
He's gonna do it one of these times.
The finish was both eye rolling, but also made sense. It was eye rolling in the fact that it was like kind of like a Montreal laugh out loud kind of thing, but It was a new way for the Miz to cheat his way to a win. I can't get mad when a heel cheats to win, so it was fine. It was just it felt just kind of like Miz is going to cheat to win, but let's throw in a Montreal reference in there at the same time, which was kind of eye rolling. But other than that, I liked it. I thought it was really good.
Johnny, your thoughts on the finish? Yeah. Do you think it was too cute? Or you think they should have done something else? And thoughts on the match itself?
Oh, well, as far as the finish goes, I do admit when I saw the sharpshooter, the first thing you're thinking of is Montreal. And there's a screwjob finish around it. However, the idea of the valet or manager or whatever ringing the bell to distract, that's not specific to Montreal. Unless it's Vince yelling, ring the damn bell. And the fact that as soon as it happened and they look over, Maurice immediately points at the ring and at the bell guy and goes, no, it's him.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
It was amazing. And then I love the finish for the match itself, Miz is, as you said, he's a guy, he gets heat. Real heat, and it's not go away heat or cool heel heat. No, he gets fucking heat. He's outstanding right now, and yes, and Maurice with him is perfect. Oh, who would imagine a married couple have chemistry? They do. Of course, Jimmy Garvin and Sunshine had better chemistry than Jimmy Garvin and Precious.
But
they are. I'm leaving it there. he was a Freebird.
He's from Florida.
Your cousins. Florida too, whatever.
Get your Southern state right.
I'm from New Jersey.
You were from Kentucky, John. Don't forget that.
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. I was. I'm a self-hating Southerner. but this is... Miz is such a great, pure heel. And Sammy is a pure babyface. And so we get a pure babyface versus a pure heel match, and the heel wins by cheating. Can't do much better than that. Miz is tremendous. And the people who still can't get past the fact that he used to not be good in the ring, or he was on the fucking Real World and all this shit and blah, 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 need to go. You can say, okay, that's fine. Yes. But this is now. He's fucking great. He's fantastic. You got to let all that other shit go.
Shots fired on Brian Alvarez by Johnny Sorrow.
Well, I wasn't fucking gonna bring him up, but in fact I wouldn't even know if it weren't for the fact that Pete told me that, but I don't subscribe anymore. It's how could you not recognize that? He's amazing on every level. He's doing professional wrestling. Those of us who love old school wrestling, that's fucking old school wrestling right there. He's tremendous, and it doesn't fucking matter that he annoyed you 20 years ago in the fucking Real World or whatever. God, get the fuck over
absolutely. And Zane, gotta give him credit. Zane really worked well here too. He was motivated, so
it
made it work better. Although I'll kind of like to think that in some alternate universe, Dolph Ziggler and Rusev were working each other somewhere.
I was thinking the same thing. These are the two guys who weren't on the fucking show. And to Dolph's credit, I was like, the feud, this ongoing feud with Miz has been made me interested in him more than I've ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next, we had Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles having a little thing in the back, Shane McMahon trying to motivate them, saying they need to focus on their match later, and we all know how that would end up. So more on that later. All right, next, Survivor Series elimination match. It's tag team time. As Team Raw, consisting of Enzo and Cass, New Day, Shining Stars, Gallows and Anderson, Cesaro and Sheamus versus Team SmackDown, American Alpha, Rhino and Heath Slater, Brazongo, the Faction Police, the Usos, and the Hype Bros. And yeah, we had a lot of the fun mic work before the match from the Raw side. Enzo and Cass were in full tribute to Drake tonight, especially Enzo with his attire, no less, honoring Drake album covers. And
If you really wanted to honor Drake in Canada, he would have come down in a wheelchair, like his character.
What's funny is all this was going on, Drake was on the American Music Awards, just winning all the awards tonight, and actually did a Degrassi shout out on the show. So, so Drake was all over everything tonight. But the match itself, I thought personally, was a hell of a match, especially towards the end. Real quick eliminations. New Day over Brazongo early. Fandango getting the pin. Then New Day getting eliminated very quickly. Gallows over Ryder. Jordan over Primo. Then Jordan ate the Magic Killer. Rhino over Gallows, Enzo over Rhino, Jey Uso over Enzo, and then we had the Cesaro and Sheamus going over the Usos, and a hell of a stretch run. And Johnny, a lot going on here, but this was a damn fun match.
Well, this is good. It's going to be one of those weird ones where everyone goes, oh, you know, Johnny Cesaro loves everything, and I didn't really love the women's match all that much. And this match for me was 50-50 the first half. And I understand why, but here's the thing. I've never been attached to Survivor Series matches sentimentally, because during the heyday of them, when they started into the early 90s, I really wasn't watching. It doesn't mean anything to me. And to me, I'm just like, that's too many motherfuckers on the rings, too much going on, and all the fast,
I mean, I definitely agree with you. Agree with you. The first part of this was definitely not as good as the latter part. That's absolutely
true. Oh, no. And that's what I'm getting to, the 50-50 thing. But because when it got down to the other half, and then leading into the Usos and Sheamus Cesaro, then I was like, this fucking rocks, you know, and it was great. And I was so rooting for the Usos. Just super rooting for the fucking Usos, because since they've done their heel turn, they're so refreshed as characters, and love them, adore them. I was like, I wanted them to win so bad. And I do love the feuding partner thing between Sheamus and Cesaro, because they're doing it better than almost anybody has in years and years. It's a trope.
Well, but it would have been over really by well. Now. In previous years. I mean, it's still going, and, you know, and both guys are still committed to it and doing great with it.
Yeah, they're doing great work with it. That's what I'm saying. It's a trope. Yep. They're doing great work with it. So I'm not upset who won. It was because that final stretch was tremendous. I was just, the beginning was all like, it was one of those, like, okay, well, we're going to get all the chafe out of the way and then get down to a fucking match. And one of the things I'm not a big fan of in wrestling is like the whole, like, okay, we got a lot of shit to get out of the way before we get to the meat and the fucking potatoes of this. And these tag team Survivor Series matches always felt that way to me. So, but yeah, but once it got serious business, the match was outstanding, I thought.
Devin, I was kind of glad New Day got eliminated early. I think it actually helped the match, because, I mean, New Day...
Oh, totally.
New Day totally. I don't know, that they're kind of wearing thin, and it was great to see, you know, see the other teams start to get more play. The Colognes got a fair amount of offense in this match too, and I mean the joke on Twitter was everyone get the Conquistadors rub from that, like, I think the 88 Survivor Series where they were in there forever before they got eliminated, but it didn't happen. But what were your thoughts about this match and how the eliminations worked?
Yeah, I thought I pretty much feel the same. You know, I thought the first half was fine, but nothing special. New Day getting eliminated was surprising, and I wasn't worried about it. I was just like, oh, you know, that's really surprising. Yeah, I thought it was fine. It was just, you know, so-so. But when Chad Gable tagged in Jason Jordan for that hot tag, and they hit, and they did that awesome dive sequence after that, when they did the dive sequence after Jason Jordan's hot tag and afterwards, it was pretty fucking amazing. There was just some stuff that was really seamless and just impressive to see. Like Gable somehow timing all those guys timing that spot where Cesaro had Jason Jordan in the swing, and Gable gets him with the rollover German.
Oh,
like the timing on that was incredible. Yeah,
the chaos theory hit it perfect. Like,
Devin, I had people watching who aren't normal wrestling watchers who were watching that spot, and everyone, they all just like popped out of their seats. What the fuck? That was amazing.
Oh, it was great. That whole sequence with like the last four or five teams was really, really, really good. And the final two showdown was for like the last 5 or 6 minutes was like the old Shield tags with like awesome shit going on. It was pretty great. The crowd loved it, and I was a little worried because the Usos are, you know, technically heels, and they still did heel stuff. I mean, you know, they still did the tequila sunrise for basically near fall, and stuff like that. But the crowd was going insane because they were working so well. It was really, 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 really good. And I loved like the last 10 or 15 minutes of this match a lot. And the finish was beautifully timed too. Just the timing on these spots in the second half of the match was really, really impressive. It was fun to see. I'm with Johnny. First half was eh. Second half
Cesaro was
great.
Just great in this match all around. He was pumped up.
Oh yeah.
Well, and that end is four really good fucking wrestlers.
Yes, yes.
You know, fucking going at it, you know, because, you know, the Usos don't get enough credit. No, Cesaro sometimes is overrated, and Sheamus gets no fucking credit for some reason. And those four guys just were tearing the house down.
Yeah, and I tell you who else I was impressed with in this match. It was like, I really dug Gallows and Anderson. And I'm hoping to God that Sheamus and Cesaro win tomorrow, win the belts, and we finally get that Sheamus and Cesaro versus Gallows and Anderson match, because I think they have a match in them, maybe more than one, that could be damn awesome.
Oh, totally.
I think they would work together. Yep. Just outstanding. And they've already had one match on television, if I'm not mistaken. I think they would be awesome in matches, so we'll see.
Yeah, but you have a match where they've toned down the fact that they don't get along into just like a full-on fight between the four guys. Yeah, that's going to be fucking great.
And after the match, Stephanie and Foley, while celebrating, because Raw had won two in a row in the elimination matches, where she announced that they were getting that tag title shot on Raw tomorrow night, or tonight. So we'll see. All right, next match for the WWE Cruiserweight title. The Brian Kendrick defending against Kalisto. If Kalisto wins, then the Cruiserweights come to SmackDown live. And I had a feeling going into the show that however the Intercontinental title match ended up would be how the Cruiserweight title match would end up. Because I had a feeling that one of the belts is going to be on one show, one of the belts is going to be on the other show. So as soon as Miz retained his title, I absolutely knew that Kendrick was going to retain his title, and I thought that Baron Corbin would be involved, and he was. So, Devin, I will say this stuff for this match, and I said on Twitter, this was the best Cruiserweight match they've had on television and on these shows since the division came up. Both men really worked great together here, and Kalisto, it was great having a guy flying around and doing Cruiserweight type stuff.
He's been missed. He's a great worker. He was the best. He was the top. He was he was up there. Literally, he and AJ were the best workers in the company the first 4 or 5 months of the year until, you know, Kalisto got hurt. He's been missed. I'm excited to see him work Corbin. I thought the match was great, actually. I saw it coming, I saw both the spots coming, but the Spanish fly off the ring apron.
Jesus
and
Christ.
The bully choke off the fucking almost turnbuckle were horrifying. The bully choke really scared me because Kalisto really didn't have much. I mean, I'm sure he got his hands down just in time, but my God.
Well, when they showed the replay from the another angle, you could see where he didn't land on his neck more than he landed like on his shoulder. But that could have been worse.
Right.
You know, that could have been a broke shoulder.
Yes.
And a lot of that is Brian Kendrick being an amazingly great fucking safe worker. So.
Right.
Yeah. It just looked bad.
Yeah. But that match was great. Cause I mean, you know, there were other nasty spots. Like when Kendrick did the roll through the roll up head first into the turnbuckle on Kalisto and it was a really, really, really good match. I was bummed out, that Corbin came out, but I like Baron Corbin and it makes sense that he would come out and attack Kalisto because they need to set all this feud in this program. And after thinking about it, it makes sense that the Cruiserweights would stay on Raw. Because I think they tried to trick a lot of people by saying, well, 205 Live's on after SmackDown. So it made everybody think that they were going to win.
Even though the press release and other times where this brought up, they said that that would not change, that they would still be on Raw and have that show. But I could see where people would get confused.
But that makes sense because here's what it is. They want them to be on both nights, not on both shows, but they want them I think they want them to be on both nights so they can get their own show on SmackDown, so they can get the SmackDown audience with people who watch Talking Smack and stuff on Tuesday. You get that SmackDown audience, and then you get the Raw audience, the casuals watch Raw, and the hardcores watched. The hardcores are going to watch 205 Live, and the casuals are going to watch Raw. So these guys, these cruiserweights, are going to get exposure on both nights.
Devin Hales with the best fucking.
And there's another thing, another reason too. And I don't know who brought up on Twitter. Hell, it may have been you, Devin, that talked about. You know, you have an extra hour of Raw you have to fill.
Yeah. I brought that up too. They're not going to take them off of Raw. You know, I thought that it was in hindsight, but I was like, you know what? They're not going to take them off of Raw because they need that. You know, they have that extra hour. So. That's why they did that. I'm pretty sure that's why they did that.
I think you're absolutely right, man. That makes perfect sense.
I want to talk about Brian Kendrick. I thought that the video before the match was awesome.
Fantastic.
Great character development.
Yes.
And
Kendrick's a good promo, too.
He's coming into his own right now in his character. And I'm really digging it. I kind of want to see him be the champion. You know, for a little bit. You know, until they get the right guy to take it from him. It could be Swanee, it could be Cedric, it could be Grand Metalik, it could be whoever. Until they get that right guy that's ready to take the belt, then Kendrick should be the champion. And I think he's been great.
Yeah, and to that promo with all the cutaway shit. He's explaining that, you know, basically he's like, yeah, you do all this high flying shit, but you know, I'm smart. I do my high flying in my mind, you know, because that's where he's supposed to be at this point in his career. He's older, you know, granted, you know, we all know I see Spanky in Ring of Honor, man. He was a fucking high flyer, you know, but he still does some high flying shit, you know, but it's not the impressive crazy stuff because that's for the baby face, and Kalisto is a great
What Kendrick's kind of doing to me, and it's definitely not the same, but I kind of get that vibe. Is he's kind of like doing like a new age Larry Zbyszko,
Okay, I can see that.
You know, yeah,
I can kind of see that.
He doesn't stall.
The battle of human chess. Yeah, yeah. You know, all about the mind.
Right.
No, he's just going. Yeah, you all just think that it's easy, but Larry.
I'll never forget Larry's stall job in his Hall of Fame speech. That had to be on purpose.
That was a good. Well, he was. Larry was more stoned than I've ever been during his fucking Hall of Fame speech.
I'm just waiting on Kendrick to talk about his golf score.
You know, I mean, no, he was higher than a hippie in a helicopter during his Hall of Fame speech. Yeah, trust me.
Oh, I know. Johnny knows, folks. He's not good. He's not lying.
You know, I know. He was so stoned. He was happy, too. He was just so stoned and happy. Talking about walking through brushes, meeting Bruno, and repeating the same story over and over again. But anyway, back to Kendrick. Yes, he's embracing this. He's the old vet guy. And, you know, to make, you know, light of the high-flying guys who want to, like, please the crowd. You're being greedy by doing that and trying to eat up the adulation of these people, but I'm smart. And it's like, oh, it's wrestling, classic wrestling 101. And I loved this match. And I'm normally not a guy who gets upset by fuck finishes. I realized this is theater. And when they went backstage afterwards, when Daniel Bryan confronted Corbin, and he's like, fuck Listo, I don't care. He's like, you cost us the Cruiserweight division. He's like, I don't care. He's like, he's a little pest, and you know what? We don't need any more little pests around here either. Looking down at Daniel Bryan, I'm like, ooh, okay.
Setting up another Bryan deal or another wrestler.
Well, it all makes sense because he's also had a long-standing character of hating indie guys, and so it all makes sense to me. But I was enjoying this match so much that when the fuck finish happened for the first time in a long time, I was like, "Oh fuck you with your DQ ending, shit, god damn it!" Because I was like super into it, which means they did what they were supposed to do. They just made me mad, you know, because a guy didn't win the way I wanted it to win. So now I suddenly think it's real, you know, but. But I wanted a clean finish to this athletic contest. God damn it. You know,
you did that to me. I'll tell you who was happy. So, I tell you was happy to see him. And from the reports of the crowd was the crowd. Because they were chanting, some section were chanting, "Thank you, Corbin." The crowd did not like this. Well, they did not really care for this match at all. And there are reasons. I'm sure. I mean, the booking of the Cruiserweight division hasn't been that great. Kalisto, the booking of him has definitely not been that great. And
them all still having a hangover from TakeOver being awesome.
They just were not into these guys, and it was a hell of a match. It was just weird, and I don't know. I hope stuff like that again doesn't deter Vince, because I mean it just kind of worries me each time they have a big Cruiserweight match, and if the crowd's not into it or, you know, going crazy.
Well, this is Canada.
Yeah, but this crowd tonight was not your average Toronto crowd. I mean, they were doing the 10 all night long, anytime anybody was counting.
Which I loved.
But they weren't doing any of the quote-unquote bizarro world type stuff.
No, I'll never forget when I was watching SummerSlam 2004 live and they booed Edge.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't doing much of that at all. I mean, this seemed like a...
Because that was the last Toronto pay-per-view, wasn't it?
So yeah, it just seemed like this was a, you know, is more of a WWE-centric type crowd doing, you know, reacting like they're supposed to react.
Well, the Toronto crowd is less smarky than it is just we're going to choose who we boo and who we cheer.
Right.
And, than it is like a bunch of smarky dum-dums trying to get themselves over. Yeah.
And, Devin, I know, like I said, SmackDown's your show. Do you think that this is going to, that the whole Kalisto, Baron Corbin thing is leading to one of the matches at TLC maybe a tables match, ladders match, something like that?
I would assume so. Probably a tables. Tables. Hell, they might even bring back the. Well, you know, they probably wouldn't bring. They wouldn't do a steel stairs match.
No, or tables steel steps makes match. Tables makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Because no matter who wins, yeah, no one's taking a pinfall, and you can have the sight of Kalisto taking a horrific bump through tables, yep. But you can also have the fact that Baron Corbin can lose by Kalisto jumping off of something really high and putting him through a table, and Kalisto gets to win, but Baron Corbin's not taking a pinfall from the little guy.
Yeah, right.
So tables makes the most sense.
Yep. I think that's probably what they're going to do. Would be my guess. They're going to, you know, it's a feud. What, you know, months in the making, which I love. So they'll settle it at TLC.
Yeah, which is in two weeks.
In a tables match.
Let's not forget that it's 2 weeks from tonight.
Which also you have to think there. Whoever is booking this is really connected into what was going on in the main event stuff, because Corbin was supposed to be on the main event team and is out because, you know, he's a lone wolf and can't play well with others and all that bullshit. And that's why Shane's in. But yet he's here, you know, attacking this guy because, you know, he just doesn't give a shit about nothing. So he's connected to both. I mean, so they're serious about him and his character.
Yep. And speaking of said match, Team SmackDown, AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, and Shane McMahon versus Team Raw. Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, Chris Jericho, and the king of all men, Braun Strowman. This match went over an hour with entrances. Wow. I mean, this match had it all. It was a complete spectacle. Just stuff going on all over the place. Wild eliminations. Wild spots. I mean, this was a match, like I said, this was one of those where they were going for all the moments. And you had the moments here. I mean, you had the list being used as a weapon and Jericho losing his mind, causing himself to get eliminated. You had the Shield doing the Shield spot, the triple powerbomb spot, which should have got a bigger reaction, but didn't from the fans because they were too busy hating on Roman Reigns. You had Shane McMahon nearly dying on a bump from Roman Reigns' spear.
Oh, my God.
And then you had a wild finish. I mean, just the stuff going on there with Luke Harper showing back up, as we talked about earlier in the show, teasing the old Wyatt Shield thing. AJ Styles bumping like a complete madman.
That bump.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But and James Ellsworth taking one for the team. I mean, this was just a wild match. And Johnny, what did you think?
Wow. I lost track of time, and you're telling me it was over an hour because it felt like that. But, you know, every now and then, for reasons stated previously, time moves in weird ways for me. and oh, thank you, Devin.
It didn't seem. I knew it was long, but it didn't seem as long.
It didn't seem. No, there were times where it did. Because I loved this match so much because there were times because everyone was watching, and we would occasionally get into conversation. We had a conversation about DDP yoga during this match in our living room, and then going back into it, and it was still going on, and everything was, as you stated, they hit all the fucking notes, and everything was pretty fucking great. I thought like, the Ellsworth bit was Strowman that he held him in by holding on his leg underneath. I didn't see that coming anywhere, and it was great. And Ellsworth exactly took one for the team. He's not like, oh, they're gonna put him through one of those tables at the top of the ramp that has like cushions underneath it, right? Oh shit, no. Nope. Oof. Hey, here's your contract, kid. Here's what you're doing tonight.
Boom. Yeah, you're gonna die.
We're gonna pay him a huge contract. Sorry, you can't compete anymore. We're gonna cancel your contract. But yeah, AJ, exactly, bumping like a freak. AJ again, just amazing throughout this match. The stuff with Ambrose, not getting along with AJ and running in and ruining everything. I loved that so much because A, it builds to TLC. And I like the idea of somebody like, oh, well, fuck you. You know, when it really gets down to it, we want to fight for the title. And we agree to play nice, but, you know, in the heat of battle, it, you know, shit fucking happens and it ain't going to work. With Shane, when he went for the goddamn the Van Damminator fucking move, and I'm thinking,
coast to coast. Yeah,
the coast to coast. And I'm like, I don't hate the fact that Shane is a badass as much as a lot of people do, because I'm like, he's established as one. Within the continuity of this universe of storytelling, Shane McMahon is a badass. So that's just the way it is. But then I'm like, no, really? Is he going to fucking take out Roman Reigns with it? And that spear happens, and I'm popping. I'm like, oh, shit, that's awesome. And then the camera hits Shane's face, and he looks like Terry Schiavo.
Oh, yeah, he was out. he was completely out of it.
And I'm like, what the fuck? And everyone's like, oh, fuck, what the? And I'm like, did he land on his neck? What? And then they show the replays. I'm like, oh, and my buddy put it, he's like, nope, they conked heads. They like chin to fucking head, because Roman was not stupid too.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, what the fuck? But it hit the top of his head. That hit the chin of Shane McMahon. And then when the referee, they go, yo, the referee stopped his count, you know, to give a signal. And I'm going, holy fuck. And Orton breaks character. And it's like, really, I mean, he's supposed to be concerned about Shane because he's the team captain, but come on, no, not this much. Like, he was like, oh, fuck, you know, I think he might be dead.
Yeah, because he raised his shoulder up. No, I mean, yeah. When he wasn't supposed to. I mean, and he was so out of it.
Oh, maybe
it
that was reaction. Like, the referee's always supposed to, the referee's always supposed to follow the rules, I guess. Maybe that's it. You know, he was knocked stupid and kicked out when he wasn't supposed to. I didn't think of that, Chris. That could be exactly what happened with there.
Had to be.
I didn't even think of that. That could be because these referees are told, you know, if a guy has his shoulders down, you count it. You know, and then it's the guy's fault. So maybe his shoulder comes up, you're supposed to stop counting, even though he's apparently about to start eating through a tube. I don't know. But that freaked me out. And it took the match about a minute to get back on track, which also made it feel like something fucked up just happened. But once it got back on track, I thought it just chugged along and it was great. And when Harper shows up, and he looks at, because they did the Shield reunion spot, which I fucking loved. But, you know, they take away Ambrose. And when Harper shows up, he's looking at Reigns and Rollins. And he looks at Rollins and he goes, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it was good. Really good.
Going back to their feud, back in the day. I was like, oh, this is the new Wyatt family. And new is normally the worst thing to put in front of anything in wrestling. New Midnight Express, new Rockers, you know, whatever. But what they did here, I was like, no, they fucking won. And they showed that it's not them kowtowing to Bray Wyatt like he's their leader. This is supposed to be a collection of equals right now within this Wyatt and this new Wyatt family. They're equals. And when they did their pose at the end, it showed that. And I was like, well, I'm into this all of a sudden. Because I was not into the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt shit whatsoever. Stuff that's right up my alley, but I didn't like it. This I like. I was like, oh, that's a power fucking group right now. And I was just, please let SmackDown win so I don't have to read a million people on the internet going, well, Vince had to wave his dick about SmackDown stinking. You know, I was like, thank God. But this was long, but fun long. And it hit, like you said, it hit all those notes. I enjoyed every note it hit. I enjoyed this more than anything else on the show previous, leading up to this. I thought this was heads and tails better than anything on the show leading up to it.
Yeah, well, no, I'll agree with that for sure. All right, Devin, this is Chris Jericho and Shane McMahon worked a lot in this match, didn't they? And that one was weird. And Shane McMahon and Dean Ambrose had, oh, my Lord have mercy, some of the worst offense you would see in any matches. Those punches both men were throwing were competing with each other for shittiness. Oh, my God. But either way, I mean, it still was quite the match. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. It was kind of it was like an amazing fun spectacle. My biggest issues with it, Johnny is correct. Shane is a badass in this universe. But it's hard for me to accept that because it's just something it's always been something for me that's been hard for me to accept. I just don't like it. I can accept if he does one or two. I mean, like, it's just he worked the match too long to me. He just worked too long in the match. That was my biggest downside of the match.
See, and Devin, that's exactly what I was thinking right as he had his neck broken.
And the thing is that Shane is effective in doing his spots, like jumping off the top to the table, doing stuff
right,
like that.
Right.
Shane
that's
working.
But when he's working, when he's out wrestling guys and working exchanges,
yes.
It's just, to me, it's
yeah,
frustrating.
He should be doing arm drags.
When he's throwing around Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, which he almost literally was doing before the big spear, it was eye-rolling to me. I did not like that. It was, you know, him doing dives and tables and going for coast to coast, I love that shit. That shit's fun. But him, I don't know. I just don't like that other. He was just in the match too long.
Absolutely.
For my liking. That was the biggest downside to the match, and I think it did hurt, especially the middle portion of the match when he was. It hurt a big chunk of the match, for as far as in ring quality is concerned, and as far as like, you know, Shane McMahon working, you know, pretty even with a lot of these guys, but I did like a lot of the big moments. All the callbacks are great. I loved Braun like coming in and just fucking killing people, and just lighting people up. And then Bray runs in and he stops him in his tracks. And so that's a callback to the Wyatt family stuff.
He broke free
though. And then Jericho comes in and he goes. And
yeah,
then
he broke
Jericho
free.
Comes in. Yep, he broke free. But at the same time, the commentary did a good job putting it over. Braun's his own guy. Jericho stopped, you know, came in, but Braun beat up Bray and Jericho both because Braun's his own guy, you know. And then, of course, they did the callback with Ellsworth because was Ellsworth on the
draw? Yeah, he was the first Braun
opponent.
Jobber
opponent? Yeah,
he was the first Braun opponent. Yes.
Yes. So they did that callback. So Ellsworth got his payback on Braun, in a way, and helped in. But at the same time, you know, they did that. They got the big crazy Ellsworth spot on the ramp. They did the Shield callback, which was a lot of fun. A thing to keep in mind: Undertaker came back on SmackDown last week, and he said, "If you screw this up, I'm coming after you." Basically,
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if he's going to get involved with Ambrose and Styles.
Well, I think that Styles and Undertaker is going to be in the Royal Rumble.
That's what I think, too. I think that's going to happen.
Well, I also think this is that Stephanie McMahon's pep speech to the team was, you better win, like your jobs depend on it, because they do. And, okay, that's fine. You're yelling at us. You do that all the time. The SmackDown team had the under-fucking-taker come out and say, you better win or I'll kill you.
He's gonna do a lot of killing.
It's a lot better. It's a lot better motivation.
He's gonna do a lot of killing after tonight. Right.
And they did the Shield Wyatt's thing, and then they also did with Owens Jericho. They teased
Jericho
the breakup
looked
even
very
more.
Upset.
Owens was the one who broke the list. He was the one who destroyed the list. So,
which also was the callback. The callback of Jericho trying to gather the list was a callback to his list of moves.
Yeah. Yep.
Being thrown
around.
Man,
that's I didn't think of that. That's a good.
One thing that was missing.
That's a good point.
I thought though, and then all this was Jericho didn't have any mic time on this show, and I think if he would have had mic time on this show, that place just would have come unglued.
Well, they were. I mean, he was most over guy in the match.
And when he started yelling at Ambrose about his $15,000, which I love every time he does that, it's great.
You owe me $15,000.
But I mean, I think that was a missed opportunity to not let him have a mic before the match or something to talk about the list, because I think that place would come unglued.
But yeah, that was, and I love the finish, mostly because I'm a SmackDown mark. And I was like the it's marks, like Johnny said, that we were going to be worried that I would have complained that Vince was waving his dick too.
But I mean, clearly, I was clearly. I mean, yeah, they got the win here, and there's definitely reason for. I mean, you could tell they're trying to elevate the Wyatt family, and there's a reason
right,
for that
sure.
coming. But you know, Vince, figured. No matter what happens with these shows. I said on Between the Sheets last week, Raw is always going to be the A show to Vince McMahon. It's just no matter what.
Sure.
No matter, because it's the live show on Monday. It's the traditional show. It's 3 hours. It's just the status it has. I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's also got a total mark for himself to where he's going to be like, oh, I need to make sure that.
No. It's not that. But he. It's always going to be.
He owns both shows.
But Raw is always going to be. Exactly. Yeah, but Raw is always going to be his favorite. You know, when people with kids, they may not admit this, but that if you got multiple children, sometimes there is a way. I mean, you'll see favoritism shine through. It just happens.
Wait, so on the mantle at his house is Stephanie, Shane, a picture of Raw and a picture of
Well, I mean, look, that you mentioned Stephanie and Shane. That's a good example. Stephanie is, Vince loves Shane, but they've had their issues. And Stephanie has always been, you know, Vince's baby girl, you know?
And these are the days of our lives. But isn't there this story was going around that Vince has more input on SmackDown than he does on Raw. It's like, try to push me out.
Well, here's the thing. Vince controls both. I mean,
I'll give these marks what they want. Great
wrestling.
He's
the be-all, end-all of both shows. I mean, no matter what. Nothing gets out there until he approves it.
See, my theory is that they're actually booked the Raw show to be to a casual audience, and they booked the SmackDown Live show to be to a more detail-oriented hardcore.
Oh, it's edited. To watch them, it's like when you watch NXT before they did the brand split. You go, well, NXT is obviously for us, and Raw and SmackDown. And SmackDown was an afterthought for years, and Raw was for, you know, the kids and the big crowds, the Globetrotters audience, I call them. And now that this is split, SmackDown is, it's most definitely being booked the way it is on purpose. That's
right.
It's not an accident.
It's
wrestling.
It's done to get two different audiences, is what it is. They're trying to get two, because they're trying to get two audiences. They're trying to get one audience for, you know, of course there's a little bit of crossover, but you know, the goal is to get two audiences, you know. So.
Yeah. And you know, SmackDown did pretty good in the ratings this week, but a lot of that,
Daniel Bryan as the guy who's in charge.
Yeah, a lot of SmackDown's rating from Tuesday, you know, how much we had to do an Undertaker and Edge and all this, you know, stuff coming back. So, I mean, they've been good.
But that was also, Chris, I'm sorry, on the show tonight, they mention that, and Cole does the argument that, you know, many of us have been making over the last week. Well, the ratings might have been the same, but we had more actual people. It's kind of like the more people actually voted for Hillary than Trump. he was making that argument.
Yeah, it's interesting. And commentary tonight was something.
Bickering.
Because they all send everybody out. I mean, you have Cole and Morrow were alternating play-by-play. And all the color guys, JBL and Corey and Byron and Atunga was going in and out. And I think Corey Graves had easily the best night tonight. Corey Graves was getting a lot of good shots in on people, especially Atunga. Ooh, when he called him Jennifer's husband.
David, yeah. And they all JBL was pretty
funny. JBL had the ultimate botch in this match because he said Raw won. So he said Raw won, and he had to catch himself. Oh, SmackDown won. Everybody wanted me to say Raw won. Yeah,
if we know JBL, he's
Drunk. He was just glad to be with Michael again. Michael.
Michael. But then he's like, you know, Michael, you were the commentator on SmackDown for years. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Before you got fired.
He did say that.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean,
But no, Corey Graves, they know full well that Corey Graves is the next big star in announcing there. And that's why they have him working.
Corey Graves is like the modern day Jesse Ventura. Yeah. He tells it like he's it fantastic. Is, you know. I mean, that's basically what it is.
But they also, he's like, okay, you're going to work NXT, you're going to work Raw. You're gonna work the pay per views. He's like, "Yep, whatever you want."
205 Live too. He's on there with Morrow.
Okay, there you go.
You know what? Getting his career ended in the ring was probably the best thing that ever happened to him.
Oh, totally. I mean, well, yeah, you don't want someone to be
but I'm talking about professionally.
But professionally, yes. Oh, because he is the future.
All right.
And so is by the way, so is Tom Phillips.
Yeah, well, everybody better say that.
He's the next Michael
Cole. We better say about Tom Phillips because we may get fired if we don't. Because he's notorious for getting people fired.
Well, all I know is that him and Corey Graves together are the best announcing team I've heard in decades. Yeah, they're good. So.
All right, main event. Oh, my God. Bill Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. Holy shit. Bill Goldberg is an amazing physical condition for a guy his age.
Jesus
He's 50, Christ. 50, 51 years old. I mean, that guy is blessed. Let's put it that way. He is in tremendous physical shape. And he played for George Bulldogs, played for the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, I'm going to be a big-time Goldberg fan. And I had a feeling. I mean, I kind of figured going to the show that Goldberg was going to win. As how they were going to do it. I didn't think this was going to be the way they were going to do it. I was totally flabbergasted at this.
Nobody
and
did.
Devin, wow. I mean, when we got on the phone after the show went off there, both of us were just like, we couldn't believe what we just saw. And this doesn't happen in wrestling that much. And I mean, you never have a match end in less than 90 seconds like this. A big time pay per view main event in wrestling. It doesn't happen. And it was amazing. So, what did you think?
It was shocking. It was awesome. Okay, look, I hate Brock Lesnar now. I mean, in a way, it was. Like, to me, it was almost like it was satisfying to see him get destroyed from like a kayfabe sense. It was like, I'm tired of this asshole beating all these guys. But it was shocking. The pop that 90 seconds got was pretty amazing too. I think the crowd might have started to realize what was going on. It's like, but that good Lord. I'm still kind of speechless because I don't think this would have meant as much as far as shocking and surprise goes if we didn't have the past, you know, the last 4.5 years of Lesnar ending the streak of bloodying and beating the hell out of Randy Orton at SummerSlam and squashing John Cena in that, you know, that 10-12 minute squash at SummerSlam a few years ago. Like, I don't think we would have had this same reaction. But to see this, I don't think anybody was expecting Brock to be steamrolled like he was. It was awesome to see from a stance of, man, I want somebody to beat Lesnar's ass. It was a little disappointing in the sense that, you know, for me, I would have hoped that it would have gone to someone who was a rising star. But at the same time, you know, Goldberg wanted his son to see him wrestle. So if you think of from that point of view, it probably, you know, it's probably pretty cool for his kid to see his dad beat the shit out of Brock Lesnar in 90 seconds. So good for Goldberg and his family, for sure. I bet Brock got one hell of a paycheck. But also, apparently, Chris, you said earlier that Brock and Goldberg are really good friends.
Yes.
So that also makes sense if you take that into account as well. It was shocking.
It also makes sense the fact that Brock Lesnar has repeatedly said, I realize this is acting. I don't give a shit. If you want me to win, I'll win. If you want me to lose, I'll lose. I don't give a shit. He's right. Going on record saying that shit. He's right. A total professional.
I mean, yeah, that definitely had to play a factor in it too. Brock would not have done a match like that against Randy Orton, John Cena, or, you know, even I don't even think he would have done it for Triple H. And Triple H is the fucking boss.
I don't know if they said this is what we want. If this is what we want, and this is what we're paying you. Maybe,
but still, I think that it was easier to do it with Goldberg considering their relationship. Johnny, sure, Dave Meltzer thinks that this is going to be leading to another match.
Really? I thought this was supposed to be one.
Well, no, I mean, obviously from the way this match was done, Goldberg's definitely wrestling again. But if this... No. If that was the case, he would have jobbed. I really think so.
I think he'll wrestle a match at Mania, and then
that's my question to Johnny and you too, Devin. Is, God, if you're gonna bring him back again, don't bring him back against Lesnar. Bring him back against somebody else. Let's have a real dream type match.
I'm assuming that this is it, man, because he said Goldberg, you're next and you're the last.
Well, I think that was the original plan, Donnie. But I think that both parties. Goldberg, I think Goldberg was really motivated and touched by how the fans reacted to him. I'm guessing in his heart of hearts, he never would have thought how over he would have been coming back after being away for 12 years.
Yeah, he was also drenched in sweat and exhausted after 90 seconds.
Well, yeah. It worked though. That Toronto is not a Goldberg town. God knows the last time Goldberg was in Toronto, I remember WCW, that was the whole Bret Hart deal with the plate. And so Canada hated Goldberg.
Come on, that's Bret Hart.
But the fact that he was out there and they were cheering like crazy. I mean, the guy has something there, and they would be stupid not to throw up, you know, crazy money at him to come back for another shot at WrestleMania.
Oh, I agree. They're probably going to throw crazy money at him, and we'll see because of that. But I can also see him being like, no, that's good.
I mean, he's going on the road, you know, I'm just saying, but I definitely see him working more than one match.
Yeah, I don't want him to. I don't want him to, because I thought this was fucking perfect. This was so shocking and just so perfect. I mean, I will give you a recreation of the audio in my living room while this was going on. First Spear gets hit. I jump out of my seat and go, Spear! And then I'm like, okay, I'm thinking to myself, well, Brock's going to block this next Spear, right? No, Spear! And then it paused a little bit and going, and Brock is selling like a motherfucker. Brock's selling was amazing. And he gets him up with that jackhammer, and I'm just, jackhammer! Boom! And I'm, one, two, three. And I popped, and I don't like Goldberg. I have no connection.
Oh, we got breaking news, Johnny. So, breaking news.
What's that?
As we're talking about this, Dave Meltzer has just reported that due to and also thanks to Pro Wrestling Sheet, our buddy Ryan Satin, that Bill Goldberg has agreed to a deal this week to appear at the Royal Rumble, at the Alamo Dome, and possibly
wrestle.
And they're going to – the original deals were only for this one match, but Goldberg got over so well as expected that both sides made the decision to keep him going. It would be expected that Goldberg and Brock would face off at the Rumble, although that has not been confirmed at this point.
Okay, well, take everything I said and throw it out the window because I'm a dummy. Thanks, Chris. You're going to save that for after the show. No, okay, good. No, okay, fine. But from my experience before that news drop, I was like, he can walk away right now, and that'd be perfect. Perfect. Because, like I said, I was not a Goldberg guy. It was not my thing. When Goldberg's rise happened in WCW, I had already gotten tired of WCW and was, like, invested in WWF. And, you know, like, there's a decision with my wife going, pick one or the other. I'm not going to sit here and watch you flip back and forth. So I didn't have the Goldberg mystique to me. And so it never meant anything to me special. But the build up to this, I was like, he's awesome. The fact that he's like, no, I will not use a script. And going out there and just riffing. And
that's the difference, because
mic.
Goldberg in WCW was not known for his promos. But he did really good promo work in his comeback. And he brought his, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma accent out. I mean, he was awesome.
Oh, it was great. His promos were unbelievable. Him interrupting Heyman to the point where Heyman actually is doing the old crying thing that was on Raw past week. It was unbelievable. It was so good. And so I wanted Goldberg to win too, and I kind of thought he was going to as well. Because I'm like, I know Brock doesn't give a shit about losing, you know. I didn't expect this. Nobody did. And I popped huge. Everyone here was popping huge. You don't even know what the fuck's going on. Apparently everyone was like, that's amazing. And it's great. The big bully Brock Lesnar. Oh, yeah, fuck you, pal. And Goldberg comes back and is the superhero. And it was fantastic. But why did he feel the need to have his son take his shirt off to bring him into the ring? Because
he loves his son.
I just got to say, I get the thing, you know, my son, you know, him doing it, my son can see me kick some ass. I loved that bit of this story. I thought, that's great. That's great. His son, he rips his shirt off. He's got no shirt on, and he's in the ring with his dad. And if you just tuned in and you saw this giant muscular man with his little boy, I was like, this is like the movie Spotlight, right? this is the Mel Phillips school of booking wrestling.
Well, he wasn't barefooted.
I've got a million of them, but
Johnny, he had his shoes on.
That poor boy is going to have to live down being fat shamed by his father in the middle of the ring with no shirt on. It's like, oh, that poor kid. What the fuck? But besides that, I love a great shocking surprise. And in wrestling, it's really hard to do nowadays. They did it. I can appreciate that. and I marked out for it.
Okay.
So, you know, yeah,
here's the question that I posed to both of you earlier, I mean, before we did the show. It's easy for us to say this when we pay $9.99 a month. If we had paid $60 for this show, would that change your outlook on this main event?
I'll go first real quick. If I paid $60 for this, it wouldn't have, because the actual main event delivered. If I paid $60 for this, I would have been mad because I don't think the whole show delivered. I wouldn't have been mad about the main event.
Interesting.
Because the tag main event delivered. But I said to you, if I paid a scalper's fee for front row tickets because I wanted to see Brock versus Goldberg and I thought it was going to be some epic match, then I'd be really fucking pissed off.
Yeah. Devin?
I don't think I would have been mad. I think I might have had the same reaction. I don't think I would have been mad. But I can see someone else being upset if they were really thinking, oh, I want to see this epic match. I wasn't really looking forward that much to Brock Goldberg. So I was kind of, you know, I'm happy that it was a short match. You know, if they had gone long, oof, man, that might not have gone too well. But especially with Goldberg's cardio, but and Brock's even to an extent. I don't think I would have been upset, but I can definitely see anger from other people who spent $60 who wanted to see like a big epic match.
I tell you what, you know. It was so interesting that, you know, they started the show an hour early. We had a 2-hour pregame show, and they ended the show at 10:30.
Yeah,
I mean, that was nice.
10:35, I think,
It was nice. But how happy was your brother Dustin over this? Because Dustin Hales cannot stand Brock Lesnar. He has a vendetta against Brock Lesnar.
Oh, wait a minute. So now, wait, hold on. So you guys have like a whole Dalton family?
Oh yes.
There's Papa Dylan, Devin,
Dustin,
and who?
Dustin
and Dustin
and Drew. But
Drew is the non wrestling fan of the family.
Oh, you're like the Wyatt family of fans.
But I think Dustin was speaking in tongues on Twitter after that match at one point, because there were just random letters and numbers was coming out on my screen from his Twitter feed.
Yeah, he's the one that came in the barn. He's like Roughhouse Fargo. They're just giving it every now and then. He's out of a nut house.
Great reference, Tennessee.
Amen.
So, yeah. There you go.
But yeah, how happy was Dustin for all that?
He is his biggest pet peeve is when old wrestlers come back and wrestle like one or two matches a year. He hates it. It drives him insane. So
we wouldn't get along.
he was I think half pleased because he also hates Goldberg for coming back and wrestling. So in fact, he came in when you weren't on, John. He said they're both fucking terrible. He came in and shouted in my room and then left.
How'd you understand him? I imagine it's like Nell, that movie with Jodie Foster.
But yeah, I mean I tell you, that was just
a Nell.
Yes, in 2016. Admit it, Johnny, you got excited when Nell was topless, weren't you?
I never saw it. I just know that it's about a hillbilly Jodie Foster who talks because her mother was deaf.
Yeah. So, oh man, anyway, let's.
No. Come on. I'm a normal human being. When I get turned on about Jodie Foster, it's when I'm playing pinball.
Well, at least you didn't say Taxi Driver.
It took you a
second. At least you didn't say Taxi Driver. Then we were... That even worked.
really? I think it's a flip of a coin. Which one's
worse? Yeah. But anyway, thoughts on the show? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. Johnny, we'll start with you.
I got to tell you, I was about to say definite thumbs in the middle until we did this show. And now I'm going to say it's a thumbs up. But, in all seriousness, I'm still going to say thumbs in the middle because there's a lot I actually didn't care for. And I don't like Survivor Series matches. The general concept of them, it's not something I'm attached to. So there was a lot I didn't like. And there was a lot what I liked was outstanding. And what I didn't like, I thought was boring as fuck. So I'm going to go thumbs in the middle.
Interesting, interesting. Devin?
I thought it was a fun show. It was one of the more fun shows I remember watching, so I almost want to give it a thumbs up. But there's some things that happened that I was kind of on. So kind of high thumbs in the middle, almost a thumbs up, but a thumbs in the middle.
I'm going thumbs up because I was highly entertained the whole show, and that matters. I mean, yeah, some of the booking was god awful in some things, but man, I just was entertained throughout the night, and that main event. I mean, I love the way everything played out there, and mm-hmm. I always say there's a difference in having fun. I mean, have a fun match and a good match, because there could be some really bad matches that are fun matches, but they're fun. They're entertaining.
Of course.
And not all good sure. matches are entertaining and sure. fun.
Every Shane McMahon yeah. match. Every Shane yeah. McMahon
not match. Every good match is entertaining and fun. So this was a fun show. I was entertained. And
I'm the world's biggest Jimmy Valiant fan. You don't got to sell me on that concept.
Hey, and that's funny you mentioned that, because there was a debate in my DMs between a couple of guys about Jimmy Valiant probably had the better offense than both Dean Ambrose and Shane McMahon in tonight's Survivor Series match.
Well, you know what? I think Dean Ambrose has a fine offense, but I'm not going to argue with that because Jimmy Valiant's awesome. You know,
so
dude, that the boogie woogie elbow drop will destroy people.
Yes, indeed. All right, plug time, Johnny. What's going on with your podcast lately?
Well, let's see. We are going to be recording a new Brain Buster in December. And that's about it. Check out all the Titan stuff. It's all groovy. It's all cool. But I am going to be doing a new Brain Buster, and I need contestants.
Open call.
For entertaining people. I don't care about how much you know. If you're entertaining, I want you to be on this show.
You firing shots at the previous guest on your show?
No, I'm not. I want people who realize it's all about just having fun, and it's not really a fucking competition.
I'll never forget when Parv had a conniption when he couldn't.
The funniest show we've ever done. The funniest show we've ever done. Also, Chris Zellner right here, also part of one of the fun, and with your brother, one of the funniest
shows we've ever done. The connection's Goldberg, because that was one of the questions.
Yeah, the Goldberg streak. That's right. The Goldberg streak, that might be the greatest moment in Brainbuster history, was it took me hours to come up with Goldberg's streak, and I had a game based about it, and I started it and with Zellner, and he shit the bed about 30 seconds into it, and I was like, wait, all my strategy, I felt like Jericho with my list going everywhere. No, I planned this. I booked this contest for Zellner.
I had a brain fart that day, I gotta say. But
Well, we know.
Now I want to redeem myself.
Billy Kidman Billy Kidman is the most bulletproof motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to redeem myself on a show in the future, that's for sure. All right.
Well, you're invited, sir, to be on this show in December. I'll be in touch with you.
Between the Sheets actually dropped as we recorded this show. As I noticed on Twitter, we went to November 16th to the 22nd, 1987. Talking about all kinds of shit that was going on that week. One of the highlights of the show is a lot of great clips from the Memphis television show that week. Fun promos, fun angles, including the Lance Russell shilling the Jeff Jarrett poster that they were. I tell you what, you could definitely see why the women loved them some Jeff Jarrett by the way he had them jeans going. And Jeff Jarrett definitely not circumcised. So there you go on that one. And there's a lot of other fun stuff on the show. Hulk Hogan rallying the troops for Survivor Series 87. Yeah. And check it out. So Place Me Nation.
My foreskin hits my nuts. That's why I came up with slap nuts.
So placemenation.com should be up there. Soundcloud.com/BTSpod. Just check it out there. Exxon Bash Street, hopefully recording an episode this week, which means maybe one will be up before December. It's been a while since we did one and trying to get back on a decent schedule of pumping those out. And real quick before we close the show, on a serious note, a good buddy of ours on the Pro Wrestling One message board, Crossface Chicken Wing, a.k.a. Adam Check, passed away this weekend from complications from cancer. Okay. If you listen to Between the Sheets, that's opened the show talking about it. And a real sad situation. He finally had cancer late last year, around this time last year. And one of the things that he told us was that all the podcasts was, helping him out. It was, bringing him joy as he was fighting his battle with cancer. And that was an honor for hear somebody say that, that what you're doing, your work that you do, is helping them get through a tough time like that. And he's a fairly young guy. Huh? He was in around all our ages, in the 30s and stuff like that. And he had a young child. And just sad to see that happen. And cancer, man, it could take you out. And it's a shame for him and his family. So, I'll dedicate this show to him, just like we dedicated Between the Sheets to him. And, this is a sad situation. So, anyway, Devin, thanks for being on the show. Johnny, thank you, as usual, for being on the show. And in 2 weeks, we have TLC. Will may be back. Who knows? Yeah. He may be on another one of his grand adventures, as he's a bon vivant in this time period. So who knows who hosts me, him. There'll be a show no matter what. So anyway, check us out then. So this is Chris saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia.